Welcome to Beyond the Shelf. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is entrepreneur Paul Vogue. Paul is co-founder and CEO of Ouroboam, a sparkling water made from herbs, fruits, and flowers for earthly tastes and heavenly feelings. Currently sold in 1,000 plus retailers and online at ouroboam.com. Paul was previously an associate with Saturn V, which launches, grows, or buys, builds companies. He was also in business development for Gusto. Shameless plug, I enjoy Gusto. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Scott. Thrilled to be here. Actually, fun fact about Gusto is I worked there, and actually my wife and co-founder, Maddie, at a totally different point in time, at a different office for Gusto, also worked there. So if you are paying your employees or using Gusto and you see a funny joke in your email or on their website, Maddie used to be a copywriter there. So we have deep ties to Gusto too.
That is cool. Yeah, I can definitely attest that there's, I think, you know, if you're waiting, it'll make a joke about it or whatnot.
Yes.
Definitely brings some personality. Speaking of brands with personality, Ouroboam, I would say definitely qualifies for that.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started. You know, let's be upfront about this. Beverage is notoriously tough to compete within.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to hear what motivated you to start Ouroboam, and noting as well that it has been very successful in a highly competitive environment.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think when you talk about beverage with kind of investors or longtime food and beverage operators, ready to drink beverage in particular, either they mention one, how cash inefficient it is, or two, how competitive it is, i.e. takes a lot of money and there are a lot of competitors. And between those two things, I don't know what we were thinking, but despite that, we got started. We sold our first can in November of 2019. So the idea was, hey, there are a lot of sparkling water companies, but it feels like none of them have done a good job of catering to what I'll call kind of the new consumer. I was working at a small private equity firm. We had a fully stocked fridge filled with LaCroix, Waterloo, Polar, and we didn't really have anything interesting. I'll say I was drinking 10 cans a day of those conventional sparkling waters and not really enjoying it, as were a lot of my colleagues. So it felt like it's the most popular item in the fridge, but the least enjoyed. And that felt like a weird tension. So Maddie and I bought a SodaStream, started tinkering with odd, interesting flavors. And the goal was to set out to make kind of the craft sparkling water. What Kettle did to potato chips, or Justin's did to peanut butter, or Jenny's did to ice cream, we wanted to do to sparkling water.
And you did send me some, which I appreciate in advance and did enjoy. There is definitely, I'm not going to try to be the expert here, but just far more flavor than perhaps some of the ones that you mentioned. So it's definitely enjoyable. You know, in with Ouroboam, you went with, I would say, some very fun, perhaps whimsical branding. Walk us through that process. What brought you to that style and positioning? And how has it played towards your success?
Yeah. So I referenced her already. I married well is the quick story there. So my wife, Maddie, who I just referenced, was a copywriter at Gusto. She has been kind of in the branding world her whole career, often in software. And we both kind of felt like, okay, what we're trying to do here is create peculiar but delightful sparkling water flavors. I.e. we're always skirting the line between how do we make it interesting, different, unique, but not intimidating, scary, gross. And there's some line between those two things. The goal was, okay, can we make the outside of the can and the brand as whimsical, peculiar, and unique as the inside, the ingredients? And maybe beer probably is the best example here. About 15 years ago, it felt like maybe it started with Sam Adams, maybe it started with Dogfish Head, maybe it started with Sierra Nevada. I'm sure people would give you different answers. A lot of those brands decided, hey, how do we be different from the Molson Coors, Miller, Anheuser-Busch's of the world? Well, we're going to have different ingredients and different flavors, but we also want the outside of the packaging to reflect that. So that was the idea. Maddie had a lot of opinions as it pertains to colors, shapes, what's on the can. If you haven't bought our packaging before, you'll see critters in this surreal world where strawberries are the size of Escalades and sloths ride down rivers in cucumber canoes and hopefully it is a small moment of delight in what could be a not so delightful day as we're all at work. So that was the idea. Can we have the packaging and the brand match the fun flavors inside the can?
And it certainly, at the very least, stands out because of that. And you do have fun, just your flavors that sound fun. Let's just put it that way. Cactus rose, peppermint watermelon, lavender cucumber. You have a lot of flavors, but almost more intriguing perhaps is your ingredients and your commitment there to what you put into the can, right? And the promise that you have around that. So share with us a little bit about what that commitment is and how you've stuck with it and you know why it brings, as you say, happy thoughts to folks.
Yeah. A couple of items there. So I noticed, and probably this will be intuitive to anyone that drinks a lot of sparkling water. I'll pick on a big, well-funded, publicly traded competitor because I don't think they'll listen to this. And if they do, you know, it's not anything they haven't heard before. If you leave a LaCroix in your car overnight, you're probably not going to drink the second half of that beverage in the morning. It turns into a bit of a science experiment. And what you're tasting there is not water, but you're tasting a citric acid. So the first thing is, we noticed, hey, we wanted a more natural taste to our sparkling water. How do we get that? So there are kind of two elements. One, we don't use citric acid, which is a pretty normal ingredient for LaCroix, Waterloo, Polar, et cetera. And the reason they use it is not because it tastes good. It's because it's a very cheap way to carbonate a drink. When you add carbon dioxide to water, it creates a substance called carbonic acid. So any carbonated drink you've ever had, kombucha, soda, sparkling juice, et cetera, all of those are acidic beverages. They are acidic just because they're carbonated. And if they have citric acid, they're even more acidic. And the idea is if the substance that's flat is already acidic, it doesn't need to be carbonated for as long. So we end up using way more carbon dioxide than our competitors, which is an expensive thing, despite the abundance of carbon dioxide we have in the atmosphere. It's an expensive thing to push into a can of water. And as a result, it gives it a more natural taste. If you leave a can of Ouro Boro in your car overnight, you know, it's going to be flat, of course, in the morning, but it's not going to taste like a science experiment. You're going to taste flavored water. You're not going to taste flavored acid. The secondary piece is we wanted to use herbal extracts. So funny story here. When we bought that SodaStream, Maddie had a bunch of essential oils that, I'll say this from the get-go, do not consume essential oils. They're not meant to be consumed. They're meant for topical use only, or even better, in the atmosphere. And we didn't know that, of course. So for many, many months as we were making these flavors, essential oils seemed like the best way to get lavender or to get basil, et cetera. And very quickly, a food scientist told us, don't do that. But the other piece was, okay, what's the closest ingredient to the actual substance? And through a lot of research and tinkering, it seemed like herbal extracts were the best way to get a hold of a real peppermint flavor or a real basil flavor or a real orange blossom flavor. So that was the idea. And those are probably the two main differentiators in terms of ingredients. And then finally, yeah, we use reverse osmosis water. It's as purified as water can get. It is PFAS free, free of all fluoride, free of a lot of the small minerals and small microplastics that unfortunately have infiltrated groundwater, you know, on all seven continents.
There's honestly a lot there to process about what we're consuming. I'll leave some of it as you said it. All this does, of course, net out to zero calories, zero sugars. Correct. Which, you know, it's weird when I see that, my small brain here, it's hard for me to process. So you know more than me clearly at this moment. Why is it hard for me to process that something that has taste to it, meaning other than water, can still be zero?
Yeah, great question.
Like, how is that achieved? That it's not even 0.01 calories? Because, you know, I think of calories as like not existing, right? There's not energy to it. There's not. So it's really hard for me to wrap my head around when something is zero. Can you help me understand that better? Because it's bothered me a long time.
No, of course, of course. And some of this has to do with, maybe I'll give the most obvious example. Do you know, Scott, the calories in a cup of coffee?
You're clearly leading me here. I probably would have said, you know, not including cream, like 30 calories.
Yeah, so a cup of black coffee is generally one calorie at the very most. That's like a 16-ounce cup would be one calorie. So Reason being out, you know, coffee is just bean water, right? We're just running water through beans. That's probably the best analog for the experience we're trying to create of, yeah, coffee has so much flavor. You get bitters, sometimes you get aromas, you even get citrus taste depending on where the bean was grown and how it was roasted. Similarly with us, there are ways to make calorie full, quote unquote, sparkling waters. We wanted to make sure it was something you could drink 10 to 12 cans of per day. So I reference myself, whether you want to call me an addict or an aficionado, I'm somewhere between those two words. There are certain sparkling waters I really love that have 10, 15, 20 calories, but I don't find myself drinking 10 a day. And it's because you are actually getting full. Maybe they're juice-based, so there's sugar in the product, and you feel like, oh, I can't really have 10 of those per day. So the quick answer is you can get a lot of taste. Tea is another great example. Both tea and coffee are calorie-less and have a lot of taste. And it's water holding on to the tastes that come off of things that would have calories, i.e., yeah, if you opened up your tea bag and you made a little salad out of what was in there, there are calories there, but the water picking up the aroma and the taste from those substances allows it to remain calorie-free. So for us, anytime we make a new product, the first goal from the onset is this needs to be zero sugar. This needs to be zero calories because we need consumers to be able to drink this 10 to 12 per day and to not get bored of it. Hopefully to have more fun than they have with plain water. And hopefully if they are a soda drinker, it's enough flavor for them to feel like, hey, this can replace my Diet Coke habit.
And to go further, you managed vegan product, you know, produce vegan.
Yeah.
Non-GMO, and then you give 1% back for the planet as well. So there's an awful lot to feel good about. Speaking of feeling good, so you were in Shark Tank.
We were.
I'm sure I will be the first one to ask you questions about that. So,
I am the youngest of five, and I feel like often with my siblings now, they're like, hey, this is my brother Paul. He was on Shark Tank. So, which is totally fine. Cause there's a lot worse reputations to have, and it's a very fun show to talk about.
It was. And your episode was quite fun. I think you could certainly say you and your wife, at the very least were adorable on there interacting with the panel. Obviously a huge decision to do it. You know, you hear a lot about the process of getting onto Shark Tank, you know, various layers and levels and rehearsals that you have to go through because they're obviously, look, they're an entertainment, right? They're looking for a certain type to do it. And then, you know, you hear sometimes about that there's pressure, because the show wants deals, right? No one wants watch the show and watch 10 episodes and no one get deals. So I've heard from folks that there's a pressure to get a deal. Where was your mindset when you first thought about going on to Shark Tank? And did you ever envision that you would get all the way through? And we'll talk about, you did get a deal and congratulations. About how that clearly has helped you. But talk about kind of your thinking before and, you know, choosing to tackle what, again, as I understand, is a quite lengthy process to even be considered to be on there.
Right. And it is quite lengthy. That's almost too generous a phrase. In fact, before we knew we were going on the show, Maddie and I said to each other, like, if we don't get this, if we don't go on this show, there will certainly be nothing in our life we have spent more hours doing with no fulfillment. There's no DMV line that even comes close to how many hours we spent doing nothing or mindlessly putting together details for the producers at Shark Tank. So obviously it worked out, but for all the brands that get to that place, they have my unbelievable sympathy because it's really, really thorough. The quick story is at the very beginning of COVID, maybe the second week of April of 2020, we got an email to our like general inbox from someone claiming to be a casting director at Shark Tank, which naturally I assumed was just a friend with more time on their hands pulling our leg. I thought there's no way this is real. And fortunately for us, it was a casting director at Shark Tank. He was a really lovely guy. He explained the details in that there is a normal casting process on ABC's website for most brands, but when they have guest sharks on the show, they like to have companies and brands in that guest shark's kind of known industry. So if you've watched the show, you know that Alex Rodriguez was a guest shark on a couple of seasons. And coincidentally, when he goes on, every time there's some sort of athlete or sports-oriented product. That is by design. They're looking for specific things for Alex Rodriguez. So for us, they didn't tell us this at the time, but they were essentially trying to find food and beverage products for Daniel Libitsky, who is the outstanding founder of Kind Bar. And luckily this casting director saw us in a grocery store in Los Angeles and liked the product and wanted to chat. So that was the beginning. What followed was what felt like 4 or 5 videos and 3 or 4 scripts and probably 100 pages of signatures. I think I owe them my dog or my firstborn son or something. And what was great about that is we had so much time to watch pretty much every season of Shark Tank, particularly episodes that had a food or beverage product. We didn't hear back for many, many weeks after kind of the last step of the process. And both Maddie and I felt like, well, we gave it our all. We tried our best. And then the last week of July of 2020, we got a call saying, hey, can you be out in Las Vegas in 8 days? So we drove out to Las Vegas. It was during COVID still. So we had to quarantine for 10 days in a hotel room, which was a totally bizarre experience in and of itself. And then after having no socialization for 10 days, we went and talked to some high power billionaires. So it was it was certainly something I won't forget. And at the same time, I was so nervous, I almost don't remember it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I can imagine you almost black out. How nervous were you going into it? Scale of 1 to 1,000,000.
Oh my gosh. I've never been more nervous. I wasn't more nervous on my wedding day. I wasn't more nervous before taking tests in high school or college. I wasn't more nervous before getting promotions. I think some piece of it was we were both feeling pretty good. And then the morning of, we were feeling pretty good. And I'll be honest, there's a little bit of mind games that go on. Of course, like you mentioned, this is a TV show. You know, they are ultimately driven by ratings the same way that we are driven by repeat revenue. And right before you go on, the producers typically do this. If you're in a group of 2 or 3, they will split up the group and have you wait in separate areas with no phones, totally quiet backstage. And sometimes there's a little bit of a whispering that goes on of, hey, you might want to emphasize this, or, you know, our executive producer really likes this aspect of your story. And I kind of felt like it was a little bit like icing the kicker. I was like, oh my gosh, I've been kicking, you know, I've been kicking from 40 yards all morning before the game. And now just before you call a timeout. So I was not that nervous until probably 5 minutes before when that happened. And then the hallway doors open, the cameras start, and you don't really realize, oh gosh, there's more than just 5 sharks in this room. There's probably 50 behind the scenes people behind all the lights and cameras. So it was definitely a nerve-wracking experience that we did not expect. I'm grateful that the editor was generous. I'm sure they edited out a lot of verbal flubs and gaffes here and there, but all in all, highly recommend. It was a blast.
That's what an experience. And I understand you're in there a lot longer than the show indicates, right? I mean, your segment probably ends up 10, 12 minutes, but I've heard that you're in there quite a long time.
Yes, our segment was 7.5 minutes. In fact, the first thing I said to the producer that worked with us, as soon as we got off stage and the cameras turned off, I kind of put my head in my hands and I said, ugh, that wasn't long enough, right? Like, that's not long enough to go to air. I thought like, oh, we didn't give them enough meat to edit down to 7 minutes, because this is how much of a time warp it was. I felt like someone drugged me. I thought that we were out there for 11 or 12 minutes. I remember Lori went out first. If you watch the show, Lori does a lot of kind of Home Depot, QVC deals. Lori went out first and she was like, hey, I don't really like food and beverage products all that much. And when she went out, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's like 2 minutes in. Like, we just walked out here. All right. Turns out she actually went out like 30 minutes in and we were out there for 49 minutes. So I've never had time play tricks on me in the way it did. Maybe it's the lights, maybe it's the cameras, but yes, 49 minutes got edited down to 7.5.
Wow, we should have hooked you up to some sort of, I don't know, EKG or something.
Yes, right.
And then, you know, I want to talk about a few things that were highlights of it. One was the discussion of price. And on the show, Mark Cuban had, kind of challenged the business model a little bit of, you know, velocity and scale. But if you don't have a higher price, then it just doesn't work for him. And you kind of stuck your foot down a little bit and committed to maintaining an affordable price, which is, you know, online currently, it's a one case of 12 is $30. So yeah. I do consider that in the affordable category for something craft, considering a straight bottle of water is $1.52.
Right.
You've committed and you've stayed committed to that price. I'm sure you've had some pressure from retailers to maybe, you know, push that a little bit. But it caused Mark Cuban to go out. So talk about that commitment and how deep rooted it may or may not be in your kind of company mission and philosophy.
No, thank you for bringing that up. So one, obviously we were devastated when Mark Cuban dropped out. He is a big food and beverage investor, particularly if you have protein in your product, he's probably almost certainly going to invest on Shark Tank. He's a big kind of protein forward, lower carbohydrate, lower sugar investor, which obviously we have none of the above because it's a zeros across the board. But we were devastated when Mark dropped out. So the comment I made on the show that probably wasn't edited in was a lot of the early stage consumer brands focus on the natural channel, which is great. We did too to start, but they often focus on what I'll call kind of like coastal elite consumers, i.e. high household income. They're not sensitive to price on their grocery bills. And while I can certainly understand the strategy behind that, and we, you know, it's not like we sell in Sprouts, we sell in Whole Foods, we're also selling to those consumers. Our consumers do skew with higher household income. There's a problem in this country where, yeah, you can buy like a 2-liter bottle of soda for less than $3 in certain conventional supermarkets. So when we then look at, wow, America has an obesity problem, or we have a sugar problem, or more than that, I actually think we have more so an education problem of the average American doesn't realize how harmful a lot of those ingredients are to their everyday diet, energy levels, et cetera. We felt like, okay, if we're going to be making this product that is a sparkling water, we don't advertise it that often as a soda alternative. But of course, as more and more sugar gets removed from beverages, things that previously would have been labeled sodas are more so getting labeled sparkling waters. Our goal was, hey, we want this product to sell in Whole Foods, but eventually we want this product to sell in Target and Walmart and Costco and retailers that are not just for the upper class of Americans, but are for the middle and lower class of Americans. So that is a big part of our ethos. You're absolutely right. We have gotten a lot of pressure from retailers, investors, and the like to go up on price. Our goal is to be competitive on shelf with the most unhealthy options that may or may not be next to us. So it is not a very easy thing to do. Not just because of the pressure, but as you can imagine, we don't have the same scale that, say, a Pepsi or Coke product has. So we're not going to have as high a gross margin, but we'll be darned if we can't get all sorts of Americans hooked on the product. So
I love it. Yeah. Natural is an excuse at times, I believe, for retailers to just tack on such a premium that.
Yes.
Let's be honest. Some of the prices are silly. I'm not here to name anyone, but I'll see something. I'll be intrigued. A bag of something, and I'll be like, $6.85. Right. And right. I'll be like, for 4 ounces of that, I'll be like, it's just. I mean, I don't know where I am. I'm coastal. Call me elite, whatever. But I can't. I have a conscience as well, and I've got other mouths to feed around the household here.
Well, there's a good story there, Scott. I'm in the Bay Area in San Francisco, which is where we started the brand, and there is a retailer I won't name in the East Bay that is mostly catering to some of the most expensive suburbs in the world outside of San Francisco. And I walked in. It was probably the second week our product was on their shelf, and our cans were marked at $3.99. which this retailer was taking a above 60% margin on the product. So I was just devastated immediately. One, selfishly, our cans aren't going to move at the right speed if it's $3.99. And as we mentioned, this is a non-functional, zero-calorie, zero-sugar product. So I got the buyer finally on the phone. And I was trying to be very political here and say, hey, you know, we really find that $1.99 is good for us, good for the consumer, and good for you, i.e., wouldn't you rather make, the phrase we often use is, wouldn't you rather make a fast nickel than a slow dime? Rather than having those cans sit on the shelf and the store gets better gross margin, wouldn't it be better for the cans to fly off the shelf and you get a little less money, but more frequently? And the store said, oh, you haven't seen our customers. You should see the cars in our parking lot. He made some crack about the nice cars in their parking lot. They don't care if your can's $3.99 and you have such great packaging, so we know they'll pay it. And that just really rubbed me the wrong way. I grew up in New York, so maybe I speak my mind more often than I should. And I said, hey, our excellent packaging is no excuse to rob poorer customers. And he really didn't like that suggestion. And as you can imagine, about 2 days later, we were marked down to 50 cents and then very soon off the shelf, and he hasn't ordered from us since. So I will say there are benefits to being that price. I hope we make friends with consumers that find it affordable, but sometimes there are more upscale retailers that don't like our style of business, which is okay.
Yeah, you got to be willing to walk away sometimes. So then Mr. Wonderful got creative with his offer, tried to take you to the cleaners.
Yes, he did.
You told him to take a hike, and then you landed a deal with an elusive deal, because I think he's the least likely or lowest percentage of deal with Richard.
Yeah.
And then you had a little fun misunderstanding there as well. It was, you were confused about the percentage, but yes. I suspect that you don't regret saying yes anyways.
No, I don't regret saying yes. There was, as a result of it being a COVID season, you might notice in that clip or in any of those episodes from that season that no two sharks are in the same frame at any one time. And it's because they were 12 to 15 feet apart due to COVID. Mm-hmm. As a result, even though we're standing, you actually couldn't, you'd have to fully turn your body to listen to Mark on the far left, and you could no longer see Robert on the far right or vice versa. And I just heard a male voice. So I knew it wasn't Lori, but I actually wasn't sure who was talking. And then I looked away and Robert said the percentage. What was great about, it's a good moment of comedy of me mishearing and going back and forth. It's like the one clip online from the show. So a lot of people have watched it. What's great now is retailers will, on calls all week, probably once a week this comes up at least, people say, hey, are you sure you heard that number right? You know, and they like, maybe I mishear numbers to my benefit.
So what's Richard brought to the table for you?
More than anything, honestly, is that clip, you know, is actually being on the show. So there's some irony to that of, hey, make a deal with one of the sharks. And a lot of folks have recognition. They watch the show. There are reruns on the show. Another piece is, if you've seen Robert's other deals, is there's, of course, a huge bent towards digital marketing. So we had almost no e-commerce presence before going on the show. Like we paid our first dollar to the Facebook ad empire like 3 weeks before the show aired in January of 2021. So the biggest piece was realizing, hey, we can run a net profitable online business, not in a huge way, but just barely, if we follow certain tactics and kind of get into this online marketing world, which previously I had almost entirely focused on retail. So that's been a huge win.
So life after Shark Tank. So you've had other investors as well. I would suspect you may attribute that to being on the show too, but where were you when you went on Shark Tank and where are you now?
Yeah.
We're only talking, what, 18 months here. I mean, there's a lesson here in accelerated growth, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We filmed in August of 2020. So I guess it's almost been 2 years since we filmed. And then it aired in January of 2021. So when we actually went on the show filming, I think we were in about 400 stores. Today we are in 3,300. Back then we were in 400 stores and they were pretty much all in California or Colorado. Now we're in all lower 48 states and actually a couple in Hawaii and Alaska, not a ton, but a few stores there too. We are a team of 12. We went on the show. It was just myself and Maddie. We're doing limited time flavors on our website. We have a couple of new flavors we rolled out to retail. Really excited. We're launching 6-packs in a few key retailers. So there has been a lot of development lately, but the goal is to get this product out to more and more people. And then to our now quote unquote longtime fans, i.e. folks that have been buying from us. A lot of those consumers came to us because they wanted differentiated, exciting, new sparkling water flavors. So ironically, we've been around long enough that we need to come out with unique sparkling water flavors. So hence the limited time flavors every month on our website.
What's the biggest challenge you've faced in the last year? You're on this rocket ship now. What's the biggest challenge? You personally don't have manufacturing experience as an example, yet, you know, you're on the rocket ship now. What are some of the biggest challenges you're facing? Is it hiring? Is it just pumping out more cans? What has kept you up a little bit in the last year that you're solving for?
You know, what's so exciting is that it changes every couple of weeks. So I always find something to wake me up at 2 a.m. It feels like, right. I would say at one point, yes, it was production, i.e., hey, how do we not run out of this product? You know, the worst thing you could do is get into a huge fleet of stores and then not be able to deliver, or to get into a huge fleet of stores, have enough liquid, but not enough cans, or have enough cans, but not enough ingredients, et cetera. It has since transitioned to, okay, great. How do we build the right team, not just for next month or next week, but in the next 3 years? So I feel like lately it has been a lot of trying to get the right people on board, both in terms of employees. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't say, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's a very competitive category in terms of other companies and other products. It's also really cash intensive. So getting the right investor on board can make all the difference. So that's probably a smattering of things that keep me up at 2 a.m.
One final question. You work daily with your wife, Maddie, yeah, as a co-founder. Any advice? We've had a lot of folks on here, their family and spouses. Any advice for how to make it work with your spouse?
Gosh, I would say the number
one. I'm assuming it's working here, Paul.
It is. Yeah. She's actually she's in the other room on a different Zoom call, probably upset about how loud I'm talking. The quick comment is, you know, there are a lot of family members that run businesses, whether they're brothers or spouses or cousins, et cetera. For us, and I think I've heard this echoed a few times from business owners I've become friends with that fit the same description, it feels like clear communication is the number one most important thing by a country mile. So having clear communication about almost every aspect of the business, almost every aspect of our personal life has been the saving grace. I would say Maddie and I were already very, in our opinion, good communicators before this, like didn't withhold much from one another. And that gets only more magnified when money or coworkers or stress is involved, all the things that work typically brings. So no, it has been a truly kind of great partnership. And it helps that we have a very different set of complementary skills.
Good advice for life there overall. Let's talk about how you can get Aura Bora. So there's Aura Bora. I'll spell it for everyone. A-U-R-A-B-O-R-A. How'd you come up with that name? Let's go there.
Yeah. We knew we were using these kind of alternative, almost hippie ingredients. So I loved the word aura because it kind of connoted that, as well as it meaning almost nothing, but almost something. You kind of know that that's a word, but of course couldn't trademark the word aura. And I was reading a book on marketing at the time about rhyming, and we knew, okay, for the first 5 or 6 years you have a consumer brand, people are only seeing the product every once in a while in specific stores. The best thing you could do is be memorable. So even if they only see you once a month, they remember it. And we love that the rhyme Aura Bora was perfectly 8 letters, 2 4-letter words on top of each other. Maddie liked that they made a nice square. I loved that it almost sounded like Aurora Borealis, which most people have deep in their brain, but they don't know why, which is the Northern Lights. And we knew this is going to be a very earth-forward product. It's nice that we can almost use an earthly phrase. So some combination of all those things. And then more than anything, we loved that it just stuck. As soon as we said it, we knew that's the name.
Aurabora.com. Yep. Head over there. You could see that you've thought deeply about this branding and brought it to life. And you could do that on the website too. I was clicking around on there. I'm not sure exactly when and where it happened, but some watermelons started appearing. There's kind of these Easter eggs throughout the entire website. So you could shop there direct. And then talk about your retail presence, your national.
Yeah. So nationally, you can find us. Online on our own website, on Amazon, on Thrive Market, Misfit Foods, Imperfect Produce, kind of a lot of the e-commerce retailer combinations on that front. You can find us nationally at Sprouts. If you are in the Pacific Northwest or the Rockies, you can find us at Whole Foods. You can find us in a number of independent natural grocery stores. So in California, Lazy Acres, Bristol Farms, Mother's Markets, Lenardi's, Oliver's. And of course, if you want to see stores, we have a store locator on our website, aurabora.com.
Awesome. And no surprise, your Instagram is a fun follow.
Thank you.
Drink Aura Bora. I'll just say this. I think that's William Defoe holding.
Yeah, it is.
They're not gerbils. What are they? Those are cuckoo. What are those there?
You know what's funny is we actually debated as to what we thought those were. I will let your listeners decide what they think Willem Dafoe's carrying there.
Aren't they those, what, kookaburras or something? Or,
We have a chupacabra on our current can. Yeah. We hope that's what that is because our current limited edition flavor is a flavor called Tangerine Blossom that has capybaras on the front of every can. So we think those are tiny capybaras, but there is a possibility that they're another large rodent that we were wrong about.
Well, when you have William Dafoe with a cigarette holding, I'm going to go with capybaras. They're a little small for capybaras, but I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen many baby ones. Maybe it's that point being, it's a fun follow. Check it out. I don't know. There's just a lot of fun, whimsical stuff on there. So head on over. So Ouroboros.com. Thank you so much for being on, Paul. Great, wonderful story. Clearly you're having a lot of fun doing all this.
We are.
And congrats on the success and wish you and Maddie in the future as well. And if anyone wants to find that Shark Tank episode, it is a fun one to watch. And I think you can come away from it only rooting for both of you. So
appreciate that.
Keep it up, and really proud to have you on as someone that has held the ground on price and has that long-term vision and said part of your ethos so that it could be enjoyable, healthy for the masses. That's worth a lot. So thanks very much.
Of course. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us on Beyond the Shelf, presented by Chef's Best. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening to episodes.